Now we're recording. So give me a second. Here we go. So let's take, I said we're going to take about, a couple minutes just to finish up our discussion of Mishpat HaMelech. And we saw the long tshuva, the long discussion of the Ran in Joshua Yud Aleph. And I was just pointing out that this speaks to a whole area of halacha that governs or that authorizes the community or the representatives of the community to make takanos and social rules for the betterment of society, Latikun HaMedina. Correct? Are we all on the same page on that characterization of the Mishpat HaMelech? And at the very end of last year, we were taking up Josh Brofman's suggestion that this extends, well, I guess it's not, we don't need Josh to tell us that it extends beyond the Mishpat HaMelech because we know that our sugya of Kofin Zed, Zed Livnos, Beishar B'choma. But Josh had a very nice extension to Dina D'Malchus Adina, which I think is right, and possibly to the halachic principle of Hakol Kamina Kamadina. Right, Josh? That was your suggestion, which I think is a very excellent suggestion. I think it's a very helpful way of trying to conceptualize those areas of halacha and the basis of the authority of the melech within Dina D'Malchus Adina and the basis of the authority of the B'nei HaMedina when we say Hakol Kamina Kamadina. So I'm not going to review the Dina D'Malchus Adina discussion, but just recall, I think that the two main aspects of the Dina D'Malchus Adina discussion that speak to it embodying a Mishpat HaMelech, Joshua Saran type principle is A, the sources like the Mabit and the Kiryas Sefer and Gzela Perakei, who say that the halachic basis for Mishpat HaMelech is the Psukim in Sefer Shmuel, where the Torah outlines the Mishpat HaMelech for a Jew. And then we extend that to even a Melech Goy, a Gentile Jew. And if the Joshua Saran is right about where the Koach of a Melech in B'nai Yisrael stems from, and it's true that that same source grants or confers authority on a Melech of B'nai Noach or a Melech Goy, then it seems very plausible that it's the same type of power and it's the same halachic basis of authority. Correct? That's and then you should know there's a whole literature about Rishonim who source Dina D'Malchus Adina in the Mishpat HaMelech, but the Kiryas Sefer is a very clear formulation. I believe the Gra says it in a few places, and the Meiri says it in some of the sources that I put here in Nedarim, in Sanhedrin, Bava Kamma. He also assumes that the authority of Dina D'Malchus Adina is grounded in applying the Parshas HaMelech in Shmuel to a Melech Gai. The second aspect or the second feature of the discussion of Dina D'Malchus Adina that applies to, that reinforces this interpretation of Dina D'Malchus Adina as Mishpat HaMelech is the Rishonim who relegate or limit the jurisdiction of Dina D'Malchus Adina to Dvarim that are Litakanas B'nei HaMedina, which I think makes a lot of sense with the Ran's theory that the king is authorized to have this power to better society for the public good, which is exactly how the Ran explicates the notion of Koach HaMelech. So you have that in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Shin Samech Tes in Choshen Mishpat. We're going to cut out Hana LeMelech for now because that's not important for our purposes. But Dever Let's Litakanas B'nei HaMedina. That's the that dimension is very crucial for this discussion, and that emerges out of a whole series of discussion in the Rishonim, which we don't have to get into right now. All right. And you can see this works, that this idea fits nicely with this quote from the Marik and Achuva and Simon Kuf Pei Zayin, that the Mishpat HaMelech is primarily about these major social rules, not about necessarily a din shebein adam lechaveiro. Right? It's about these social interests, public goods, masim, arnonios, minhago shel mishpat HaMelechim. Not necessarily applicable in like narrow private disputes between two individuals. Okay. Thoughts on that part of the discussion before we move on? Any quick comments now that you had time to digest it over Shabbos? That's Zecharia?
Yeah, I was looking over Shabbos into just seeing how a few other people put like the Choshen Mishpat Siman Beis stuff about Makvon Shem Shalom Adin.
Yeah.
And I came across in the Aruch HaShulchan, here, I'll paste it here. This formulation, I don't know which shul he's quoting from, but from a Shuas HaRashba, I put in the Zoom chat, you know. But he's just discussing, and he says, and he says, he applies an interesting Gemara that we've seen before. If we keep everything on Din Torah and we don't do Onshin Shalom in a Din, but it's Sarach Eden Basra, Nimtza Ha'olam Chariv, Velo Chavri Yishalayim, El Pnei Shehemidu Devreim Al Din Torah. And he's referencing some Chuvas HaRashba.
Yeah, that's very beautiful. So you're saying this is a very nice, explicit anchoring of Simon Beis in Choshem Mishpat in the same thing that motivated some Rishonim's analysis of Shara.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
very nice. Because this came up. It came up in the last year. What's the relationship between Shara and this type of Mishpat HaMelech? Are these two parallel types of considerations? Are they one? Is Pshara itself a type of Mishpat HaMelech consideration? This is a very, very nice source that brings the two together. Yeah. At least for the Rishonim who read Pshara, like the Riyaz who reads Pshara as grounded in this. Yeah, very good. Let me add that to the source sheet. I'm just going to drop it in the discussion of Simon Beis. I'm going to add it to this Mar Makom sheet right now. Great. Shkayach. Any other thoughts, guys, on the discussion? So let me see. If not, we'll move into the brief discussion. Okay. Everyone's good? Hey, Ezra. Welcome. Oh, Ariel. Great. Nice. So let's move into just the other parts of the discussion. And we're going to get into this later on Daf Ches Amud Beis. But I just want to bring it up here in the context of the Mishpat HaMelech. The Gemara on Ches Amud Beis. Anybody want to volunteer just to read that for us quickly? Rashai and Bnei Ha'ir. Take a quick stab at that. Benji Katz, you want to just read that Gemara?
Rashai and Bnei Ha'ir. Lehachnot ata midot al hashirim. Ve'al schar po'alim. Lehasi al ha-kitzan.
Yeah, do you know what that means? So,
That
the Bnei Ha'ir
right.
are authorized to stipulate to make, you know, provisions and rules about measurements and prices and on wages for Poalim and Ulahasiya al Kitsasan, which is a very tricky concept, but most Rishonim mean that means they could impose penalties and fines contrary to Din Torah, Lahasiya Midas Din Torah, Rashi says, for people who break their rules. So it's a very broad legislative authority given to the Bnei Ha'ir themselves. This is a Gemara we're going to look at in Daf Ches. And I think that's very much consistent with what we've been seeing thus far, right? Do you guys agree? It's a power accorded to the Bnei Ha'ir. And you could see the Ritva famously grounds this in a type of Hefker, Bezdin Hefker, right? So there's some just type of authority given to the Bnei Ha'ir to preside and make rules about commerce. Midos, Sharim, Scharpoalim. So we want to, I think this is very much grounded in the type of Mishpat HaMelech considerations that the Ran raises. So we're going to come back to that in our later discussion of Ches Amud Beis. So let's move to the last leg of this, under Josh's suggestion, the idea of Akol Kamina Medina. Right. So we've seen in a few places that the halacha differs to Minhag HaMedina. We saw this in our Mishnah on Daf Beis. Anybody remember the context on Daf Beis where we saw Kol Minhag HaMedina?
The type of wall you have to build?
Yeah, the type of wall you have to build. That if it's not specified, we defer to Minhag. Very good. That's the Mishnah on Daf Beis. And similarly, you have a Mishnah in Bav Mitzia Pei Gimel. If you hire workers and you don't specify the terms are filled in by Minhag HaMedina. And actually, the Yushalmi very famously says, commenting on that Mishnah Bav Mitzia, Amrav Hoshaya Zosemeres HaMinag Mevata Halacha, that there are certain areas where Minag prevails even over the Halacha itself. So it's interesting, you get this, just like the Mishpat HaMelech could conflict with the Halachos of, pure Din. So too, Minag could conflict and prevail over pure Din, or Minag Mevata Halacha. And what you find is, you know, in several Achronim, and this is the article that I wrote on the Bezin's website that I signed just for you guys to look at, you really see how minhag plays almost a controlling role in contemporary, you know, commercial disputes between Jews. And one of the most important sources on this is a famous Gemara in Bava Metzia in Daled, that Situmta is Kanya. Right, so Situmta is the idea that even if it's not a halachically authorized kinyan, it's not a hagbah or mashicha, if you're doing an acquisition that's consistent with what's customary, then that customary acquisition will rise to the level of having halachic force. Did everybody understand Situmta? Yeah, Situmta is the idea, you know, they used to mark wine barrels to signify that the purchase was effective. A good way of thinking this today about this today is when you go into Walmart and you buy like a thing of water and they put a paid sticker on it, you know, to mark that it was sold. Has this happened to you ever? No? Josh Brafman never went shopping. But okay, but it's a thing. Or if you buy firewood, they put a paid sticker on it. And that can trigger a transfer if that's considered customary. You know, probably the best example today is you buy something on Amazon, there's no halachic kinyan, but they do it at Dan's in the Heights. Thanks, Ariel. Good to know. Today is you buy something on Amazon, there's no halachic kinyan, but if it's customary that, you know, by clicking buy with one click, you agree to all the rules, etc., then that could be a valid halachic transfer. All right? Does everybody see that? So it's a big chiddush, and it's a major incorporation of minhag into what makes a kinyan binding. And in the article you read of mine, you see some other applications of this. The Rashba, commenting on that Gemara, just has a very strong formulation building off the Yushalmi. So let's take a volunteer who got to see this Rashba in their preparation. Anybody get a chance to peer at it? The one that's highlighted in the page? Anyone? Okay, I'll just say it then if no one got a chance to see it. He says, Shaminan mina shaminang mevata halacha. This is in his discussion of Situmta. Bekol kayotze beze, shekol davar shebimamon al piha minog konin umaknin. Hilkach bekol davar shenagu hatagarim liknos konin. In all monetary matters, we follow the minog for what constitutes an acquisition. And therefore, we follow the merchants to determine what's a good acquisition. So I think on Josh Brafman's suggestion, which I like very much, the idea is that why is the halacha deferring to minhag here? What's the halachic or conceptual basis for incorporating minhag in these cases? Everybody want to take a stab at it? Like what gives minhag its normative force? So let's put that question in the background for 1 second. Let's look at another case and then we'll come back to that question. Benji, you can take a stab at it.
Maybe that, like, there's an implied contract when they get into this agreement that they're going to, uphold by whatever the standard is.
Okay. There's maybe, I talk about that in my article, that this idea, maybe there's an implied contract, an implied understanding. Benji, is that what you're getting at? Yeah, that's definitely a way of looking at it. I actually think Josh's suggestion is at odds with that way of looking at it. Because if it's just about what's an implied understanding between the parties, it doesn't really relate to a Mishpat HaMelech type consideration or a Dinat Machusa type of consideration. Do you see that, Benji? Even though you're right, in my article, I don't even go in this route. But when I work on my updated version over winter break, it's going to incorporate this approach. We're going to make this other approach much more strong, much more persuasively. Josh, you want to tell us the other way of looking at it?
Yeah, that is what we've been talking about the whole time, that the whole point of these laws are just so that we, you know, like this whole, I can't speak right now.
Why can't you speak?
I don't know. I'm a little out of it. I guess it's the Zoom.
Oh, again, trashing on Zoom, guys? Come on. That's so passe.
Sounds like a sunk cost fallacy on those fancy headset. Just like
my argument.
Yeah, you need to like justify purchase.
Oh, really? I love this headset. Come on, guys. Zoom isn't that bad. I'm not taking any Zoom excuses anymore. Josh, if you weren't lying down in bed, you'd be like more. You're sitting there with like your pillow and your teddy bear, and you're like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm so out of it." You got to be with Ariel in the base medrash there, you know? That's the way to be zoned in. Unless you have the guy screaming about a Reb Chaim behind you, in which case, probably not going to be so good either. Right, Ariel?
Noise canceling is pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so let me just exact. So I think Josh is on the right track. Let me say a little more. Meaning, I think one way of reading these halachos, the idea of a kol kamina kamedina, is to see it as it's almost a halacha seeking to give wider discretion to practices that are letikun hamedina or letikun b'nei hamedina. And an underlying assumption there would be that it's understood that in an economic framework or in an economy, business practices will update themselves and people will take on practices that are for the betterment of commerce or for the betterment of trade or for the betterment of business dealings. It's almost an argument about efficient markets tend towards efficiency, or at least some markets do, as reflected in people's practices. And the halacha just seeks to incorporate that through recognizing minhag. Josh Brofman, does that make sense?
Yep.
Sounds like he got swallowed by something. Guys, does that make sense to you? Does that sound like an interest? It's a very fascinating rationale, because then we're saying that just like the halacha allocates powers to a melech and allocates powers to the B'nai O'ir, it does so implicitly in the realm of commerce, viewing that as a type of tikkun hamedina or tsarchei hakahal, just like the shar, the beis shar, the choma, and the delas, and just says, you know, whatever emerges as really good practice, we're going to assume that's the tikkun b'nei hamedina, and therefore it's going to have normative halachic force. So let's take a hand from Rumi and then Ariel on this.
I'm not sure if I'm really disagreeing with what you're saying, but I guess it seems a little bit forced to put it into the category of melech, again, unless what I'm about to say really just is that. Like, my inclination in reading that Rashba was like, kinyanim are basically always, were like the kinyanim that we think of as kinyanim were only ever initially established because they were like kind of a minhag. That's what people started doing, so that's what kinyanim are. So
you're saying something very interesting, but also controversial. And there are shitos that say this. I think like Reb Shimon has like a view like this. It's an achronim run with that idea, but it's a view with limited support amongst the Rishonim. The notion that all kinyanim themselves just reflect what was customary, you know, in the Tkufas Chazal.
Well, what does he mean? What does that mean? Kol davar shebamin al pi mina konin umakodin maknin.
So I think he's just saying that generally when it comes to Dine Mamanis, the halacha defers to Minag. Not that Mesira, Hagbah, and Shtar.
Originally Minag.
Correct.
Because, I mean, even within that formulation, you could, like, that even to me is an easier way to get to what you were saying, which is, I mean, they're all Minhag in many ways in order to maintain order and, like, have things function. And so, you know, this is also, as opposed to just, like, I don't know. I don't see exactly how you get to Mishpat HaMelech without doing that.
Well, I would say that the way I would phrase it, which is a little different from your formulation, is that there are dinim about kinyanim, in the same way that there are dinim about edim and hasra, etc., when it comes to Misas Besdin. But the halacha allows those to be overridden in the interests of Tzarchei HaMedina, keeping the economy efficient, modern, not too cumbersome. And so it allows those to be overridden when and where there's a custom, a marketplace custom. That's how I would look at it.
And yeah, can you just point to that in the Rashba, I guess?
No, so in the Rashba itself, I don't think there's enough evidence in the Rashba to say that he's going in this direction. My point was just to use the Rashba to show how broadly applied. You know, whole dover. And then I want to use this Rashba actually to make the next point, and then we'll take Ariel's hand. But Romy, I agree. I don't see the Rashba as connecting the dots for us. I just see the Rashba to Melech. The Rashba is just helping us appreciate how expansive the Minhag is in Mecca Chumemkar. Ariel, I'm just going to make one more point, then I'll take your comments. Okay, great. There's a Rukiv Eger in Chushin Mishpat Simen Gimel citing this Tshuva the Marshach, which I discuss in the article I gave you to read. about this, you know, this famous debate between two Venetian merchants who had a business deal, and there was a question whether the business deal is bound by Dine Torah or by Minhag HaSochrim. Josh Hurt, do you remember this? No? Ivey. Shmuel, you remember it, right? Okay, so Shmuel, your Sims grade stands. Josh, we're going to have to amend your Sims.
To be completely honest, I thought we covered this in Rabbi Feldman and not you, but I do remember the case.
Oh, so Shmuel, you're going to now fail the course, and Josh, we're going to give you flying colors. So, man, that's the worst. No, fine. It's not so bad. I'm just kidding. So the Marshach talks about these two Venetian merchants. Whether you follow Bedin HaSochrim Alpi Minag Venezia, or do you go according to Din Torah? So you could see here, this is one party wanted L'chaivo Lamod Bedin HaSochrim Sheyadunu Beneihem Kiminag Venezia. That's Venice, and the other party wanted Sheyadunu Alpi HaTorah. So there's a debate about which rules would govern the dispute. And the Marshach here says, very interestingly, Hadavar yadua b'inyane haknios v'haschoros v'chol inyane masu matan. So notice how broad that is. Do you see the subject, the domain of discourse here? When it comes to all acquisitions and schora, schora is merchandise or merchants, v'chol inyane maso matan, right? All of commerce. When there's a custom amongst the merchants, yesh lanu leches achre min hageihem. And he cites Situmta as the basis of this. And I believe he even cites the Rashba as the basis of this conclusion, even though he himself goes beyond the Rashba. You could see over here, he says, the Rashba just said, kinyanim, and he goes so far as schora, kolinyanim, masamatam, which is very broad. And he actually cites that Rashba that we saw in the Gemara, but he takes it further. So I just want to point out the domain of this, where minog applies according to this formulation, is very broad. Everybody with me so far? Yeah. So what I would say is that what's significant about this domain is that commerce and business dealings is a subset, or it's a way of delineating the domain of Tikkun HaMedina, or at least it's one aspect where Tikkun HaMedina is very prominent, right? Business dealings. And so it makes sense that that should be governed by Mishpat HaMelech, or what we're calling here, Minag. Ariel, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, from the perspective of the Droshos HaRan, it seems that a melech, especially from the comment that he has to have a Sefer Torah with him, is talking about a Jewish man. So how would that tie in here, that you can have a secular court, albeit that doesn't have the whole idea that we saw of having a Sefer Torah with them, that's able to have, I guess, DNA or the power of a melech in the situation?
Are you asking specifically about the Marshach or in general?
If we're just finding here that the power of a minhag HaMedina can work for me,
so it's not the power of a secular court, it's the power of people's customs. I think in the sugya itself, it's the customs of the Jewish people. Like, what customs do the B'nai Ha'ir take up in their business practices? And to the extent that the Jewish business practices happen to align with the non-Jewish business practices, which is usually what happens, right? I don't think there's a uniquely Jewish way of doing business in New York. I mean, maybe a little more Hamish and a little more Chappy, you know, a Yid with a Chapp. So maybe it's a little different, but the main way of doing business is universal. We buy on Amazon, right? We use credit cards. We have lawyers drafting deeds according to, you know, whatever the norms are in our jurisdiction.
So that would be that enough Jews adopt the minhag of the secular minhag, therefore it becomes a Jewish minhag, and then we get a book.
Exactly. But do you see my suggestion here is just that, following really Josh's excellent suggestion, he's mechavein, or I was mechavein to him, is to think of the possibility that minhag HaMedina is a non-legislative expression of the Koach B'nai Ha'ir. Yes? And the Koach B'nai Ha'ir exists in the realms of Latikon HaMedina, Latzarche HaKahal,
And commerce is just one important aspect of Tzarchei HaMedina and Tikkun, of Tikkun HaMedina and Tzarchei HaKahal. Who says this? Who comes the closest to saying this? Come on. Zolti, who comes the closest to saying this? No? Anyone? Come on. Is it Kobe? Ezra? Rafi? Somebody? Josh Hurt?
What was the statement?
What?
What was the statement?
Who comes the closest to making this suggestion and in interpreting B'nai HaKol K'minhag HaMedina in this light? Benji?
Is it the Chazon Ish?
Do you say that because his name is on the source sheet, or do you say that because you the content of what he's...
Because it's next, and he also says M'vnei Shehaskama Tzibur Havei Kalach HaBeitin, and the Kalach HaBeitin is the Hefker Beitin Hefker, then... Like, then, you know, societally, we have the ability to, like, force each other in order to improve, you know, economic feasibility or
beautiful.
Economic.
Beautiful, Benji. Shkayach. Exactly. The Chazon Ish here is very wonderful Chazon Ish in Baba Basra Beis Amud Aleph. He's talking in Tosfos Divrei Maskil Begvil. That's that Kol K'minhag HaMedina Tosfos, where he says, the Hutzah V'Dafna. Right, there are some minhagim that we don't follow, but otherwise, generally, Hakol K'minhag HaMedina. And the Chazon Ish gives us a wonderful exposition about why it is that minhag should have normative power. Where does minhag get its power from? Why should we say Hakol K'minhag HaMedina and Dinei Mamonos? Right? So the first answer, the Chazon Ish says there are two answers. Had Holchen Achar HaMinhag Yesh Bo Beis Gvanim. Right? So there are two reasons, two separate considerations to why we would follow minhag. Echad is what Benji said in the beginning of Shir today. Mipnei zesha nichnas l'chatzer zu al das haminag nichnas v'kasher zocha b'chelko nishtabed l'hischai b'chol advarim sheshutav kofeu l'chaveiro. So what's the first reason why minag would have normative force? What's that consideration that I just read? Benji?
It's implicitly part of the contract.
It's an implicit agreement, correct. When I buy a neighboring property, I'm implicitly agreeing to the terms that normally govern the governance of property in this neighborhood. Correct? So it's like an implicit acceptance of the law. Benji, that's what you said earlier, right? And that's not so exciting. I mean, it's a fine theory. It's like an implied tenai. That's okay. So minug, it's as if we implicitly accept the minug. Okay? That's not really relevant to the Mishpat HaMelech type consideration. But the second thing he says, there's a separate basis for why minag, we should say Hakol K'minhag HaMedina. And what's that? As Benji read, Vasheni Mipnei Shehaskamas HaTzibur Havei K'Koach HaBezdin. What's striking here is that it's not because any individual is deemed to have accepted the minag that gives the minag normative force. Minag has normative force because a widespread practice is like, it's like a takana or an agreement of the B'nai Ha'ir to enact certain statutes, to enact certain takanos. Like we saw in Daf Chesamabez, Rashayin B'nai Ha'ir Lahasi Al Kitzasan. The B'nai Ha'ir have this koach bezdin when it comes to Tzarchei Ha'ir and Mekach U'Memkar. And the Chazon Ish is arguing that itself is what explains the normative force of Minhag. Yes, Benji? So I think and here's the crucial argument that Romy was saying did not exist in the Rashba, but here's the crucial argument for this analysis. The argument is that, well, if the reason why B'nai Ha'ir have koach over their takanos hakahal and letzorech hakahal and letzorech hamedina, it flows from this type of power of the melech, there has to be some government body authorized to make takanos for the betterment of society. And then the Chazon Ish is saying that same koach explains why minhag has normative force. And the difference is just one, it's just a practical difference between the cases, but they both have the same conceptual basis. In one case, it's proactive legislation. They got together, the B'nai Ha'ir, and they made a takana. that the speed limit is going to be 50 miles an hour, and anybody who goes over the speed limit has to pay a knas. They made a takana that everyone has to pay a 20% tax. In the other case, they didn't make an explicit takana. There was no convocation. There's no constitutional congress. But people took up the practice organically. But the practice now clearly reflects the Ratzon HaKal in virtue of the fact that people took up the practice a certain way. And the reason why that has normative force is reducible to the reason why the Bnei Ha'ir themselves have the koach to make takanos. So if you buy the argument that Daf Chesam and Beis of Rashaim Bnei Ha'ir itself is a type of melech koach or melech sovereignty that the Bnei Ha'ir have for Tzorchei Medina, then it follows automatically that the application of that principle in Hakol Kaminag HaMedina has the same conceptual roots. Romy, is that acceptable to you as an argument? Do you see how this Chaznish connects the dots very elegantly? Yeah, great. So Romy gives us a thumbs up. Benji, you like this? Yeah. Tzacharia, what do you think? Yeah.
I'm a fan.
As good as the lollipop that you're enjoying? Okay. So I think this is a really nice, it's a wonderful Chaznish. And really, in Justin, what is this? How many words does he use here? Less than 10 words. He breaks open a whole new way of understanding Hakol Kaminag HaMedina, you know, by anchoring it in Rashai and Bnei Ha'ir. Okay? And I'll just to frame it a little more to give you something to chew about, to think about and to reflect upon, even in American law, it's a very interesting question to what extent commercial laws should be enacted by Congress and by legislative bodies versus allowing them to evolve organically through practices and, you know, slow evolution of courts recognizing these practices. But they don't necessarily have to have two separate conceptual bases. I mean, the reason why Congress has authority to make legislation is because it represents the Kahal. But if the Kahal itself adopts certain practices organically, arguably that could have the same normative force. And I think that's what's beautiful about this Chaznish. He's saying there are two sides to Rasha and Bnei Ha'ir and that koach that they have within Tzorchei HaMedina. One is legislative, Daf Chesam Beis, and one is, you know, the Mishnah and Daf Beis and Baba Basra about Kol Kaminag HaMedina. Any thoughts or reflections on this analysis? That's it what I wanted to cover in this discussion of Mishpat HaMelech. Someone must have a thought on this. Eitan Jesselson, you have a comment on this? No? Okay, Kobe, this is good. Okay, Ariel.
Yeah, just in Maisa, how would this play out in, let's say, a city which isn't a rove, you're entering a place which you've, let's say, according to the Chazanish that you're going in, understanding that you're going to take things and there's some precepts. If there's not necessarily a lot of Jews there, does that mean that we can reject Chukim of the going of Jews don't listen?
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating question. And I would say you might want to have to look to see it's an interesting question whether a minog could be, do we assume that what Rov Ha'ir is doing also applies to the Jewish community if the Jewish community hasn't explicitly taken up? There's some rich discussion about this in the postgame. I would say on the Chazanish's view, you would probably have to find that rove Jewish participants in the town have taken up a certain practice for it to be a legitimate Minag HaMedina. Because his whole theory is that it's based in Rasha and Bnei Ir, and that itself at least requires rove. Right, Ariel? Yeah, so I think that's a very good point. But we'll actually see later on the Gemara and Daf Ches, what about could industries have takanos for their industries? Which is just another way of saying, how do we individuate ears? Does it mean city, or does it mean subsets of populations? Right. So what if all merchants do something? What if all rabbis do something? What if all sailors do something? Right. So ear, I think, could be defined more narrowly than city dwellers. So we'll take up. Yeah. Romy?
Yeah, I was just going to ask what exactly you do with the word Beis Din at the end of Chazanish, unless you understand it to just mean like basically in the way that the Ran says that once they're combined, then meaning once there is no melech, then it falls in the category of Beis Din or something like that.
So I think, oh, you're saying why doesn't he say
Habikoch HaMelech?
Yeah, I think, right. I think he's just thinking based off that Ran and Shulchan Aruch Siman Beis. You know, by his day, all these powers are allocated to Beis Din.
Right.
You know, as the, and in Hefker Beis Din Hefker, I think itself reflects that. We'll see it. We'll see how, when we talk on, about Daf Ches, some Achronim say Hefker Beis Din Hefker is really a Koach HaMelech given to Beis Din.
Do you think that that itself, like, kind of makes it hard to say that all of these things flow from Mishpat HaMelech? Or, I mean, I guess that the Ran at least wouldn't think that, because, like, otherwise, like, why did that? Why is that not how it was ever formulated? Meaning, why didn't the Ran or anyone else say, yeah, if there's no powers, if the powers can't all be consolidated in, you know, oh, sorry, the powers can't be given to a king, then either should be just like random people in the community or something like that.
All right, why didn't the Ran say B'nai Ha'ir?
Yeah.
It's an interesting question. Why wasn't the Ran thinking in those terms?
Unless he meant if nobody could, unless he already like accounted for that, and he meant if no. But if you know it's not feasible for there to be any political leadership independent of the whatever some give the basis, maybe.
Right, right. I mean, it depends how convinced you are by also by my point that the Koach HaMelech itself is really just an expression of the Koach right. B'nai Ha'ir having right. sovereignty. We have to, Romy, we still have to look back at those Sukkim in Sefer Shmuel. It's a very interesting question. I was looking at this a little bit over Shabbos. You know, what gave Shaul, let's say, as the first melech is, it's not so clear because in the beginning, he wasn't accepted by all B'nai Yisrael until he fought the Plishtim. Right. And then even but, that goat. Yeah, right. What?
But he was, meaning, but originally, thought, right. It's true that he was chosen through a lottery, right?
Well, the lottery was just to prove to everybody that Hashem had chosen him. I mean, he was already chosen, and this right. was just like to convince everybody, see that the lottery fell out on him to show that he was the guy. But it wasn't like, it doesn't seem like the lottery itself, you know, could have picked out somebody else.
Right, but that, I mean, that's just then all the more so, meaning Hashem chose him and the people didn't. Which maybe shows this is a bad case to learn from.
I mean, maybe, right, because maybe they didn't care who the Melech was, right?
Mm.
Or maybe the real acceptance of him as a melech came after the battle with the Plishtim, when he gained broader support. So there's a lot to look into there. All right. Everybody good with this discussion? Great. Excellent. Okay. So I'm actually going to, I'm going to stop the recording for a second. So I think it's better to break this up into two. Let's see if this works.